We made this.
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenland and I'm joined in my adventure through space and time by my son Ben, the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you doing, Ben?
Hello, yes, I am doing quite well actually today. How about you?
Yes, it's an early Saturday morning. We decided to get up and talk about more Doctor Who because there's plenty to talk about, and this is quite an interesting one because in this episode, we're going to talk about the current era of Doctor Who with Jodie Whittaker as a Doctor and Chris Chibnall as showrunner. So, as we're recording this, we're eagerly awaiting her final series as the Doctor. So, we're going to look back at the first two series of Jodie Whittaker as the first female Doctor of Doctor Who, give our thoughts on what worked and what hasn't worked, and then also give our thoughts on what you might see and like to see in her final year too.
Alrighty then. Seems like a nice little controversial topic to start off the morning with.
Quite possible. I think whoever is the current Doctor, particularly in New Who, it's always a little bit of mixed response. You know, there are people that thought, oh, Moffat's Doctor Who was too complicated. There were those like us that loved it. And there were those that think Jodie Whittaker's Doctor is a breath of fresh air. And there were those that think it's a bit too simple, so in terms of its storytelling. So, you know, they're always going to be up and down opinions. I think Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, some worthy, some absolutely not, I think has had some very big opinions.
Yes, very much so, to be honest. Especially with the split within the fandom recently over these past 4 years due to the two series we've gotten and the creative decisions made.
Absolutely. So, before we get into the detail then, broadly, what are your opinions on the current era of Doctor Who?
I'll admit, over these past 4 years, I've given this era as many chances as I feel I can muster, but with, honestly, a bit of lacklustre writing at times, but especially coming off the back of the Moffat years, which were my favourite of the show, and then with all just the hate and bile thrown around the Doctor Who fandom recently, it's really had a detriment to my enjoyment of this era. And as we stand right now, unfortunately, Whittaker is my least favourite Doctor, but that's not to say I dislike her. Because every Doctor has ups and downs. Just at this point, I feel Whittaker has the most downs than any other.
It's sometimes hard not to agree with that statement. I think, let's make very clear though, I think the idea of a female Doctor was great. I think Moffat really set the groundwork of that with Missy. For most of Doctor Who, they hadn't established the idea that a Doctor could change genders. So that wasn't an established trope in the show.
Other than 1999, where Moffat wrote The Curse of Fatal Death.
Well, absolutely, Moffat led the way there too. And so the idea of a female Doctor, to me, seemed a bit like the idea of a female James Bond. Well, why not write a great female character? You've got characters like Romana, who are great female Time Lords, and you could have them as a main character in the show too, or even a spin-off. But I think Moffat really laid the groundwork with Missy. Missy was such an amazing character, and really laid the groundwork for a female Doctor. And I actually really like Jodie Whittaker's energy and enthusiasm and passion for the show, and I think if she had better scripts, I think she'd be a really good Doctor. Not the best, I think. You know, I wouldn't class her, even with brilliant scripts, being up there with, for me, Matt Smith, Capaldi, John Pertwee, Tom Baker. But I think she can have some really good, decent stories there if the writing supported her better. I think that's the biggest issue I have with a doctor is I love Jodie Whittaker, but I don't think she's been given the best material to work from.
I'll be honest as well. I don't think she's quite got the capacity to raise the script up and the performance up as a lot of previous doctors did. She gives it her best shot,
yeah,
but she's not got a lot of that gravitas which doctors have in order to command the room. What you were saying about the writing is why I look back in this scenario at how Big Finish redeemed Colin Baker's Doctor with all the writing, and I hold out very strong hope that once Big Finish get Jodie Whittaker on board, they are going to be able to redeem her Doctor in the eyes of many, as they did for the sixth.
That would be great. I think she gives some good material. I think as well, and we'll talk about this more, Chibnall seems very influenced by Ross T. Davies' era of Doctor Who. You know, there were some of my favourites. I think some of the best. I mean, look, I say the best. Everyone has their own opinion of what is good Doctor Who, what is bad Doctor Who, and no one's opinion is any more or less valid than the other. You know, that's a great thing about Doctor Who. You can enjoy it. But it does feel very strongly that Chibnall is influenced by the Russell T. Davies era of Doctor Who, and those episodes like Fugitive of the Jadoon, Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror, Kablam, The Witchfinders, they're very RTD influenced scripts in my opinion. And I do wonder if Jodie Whittaker had been the Doctor with Ross T. Davies writing, that we would see a little bit of a difference.
It's very possible, yes, because where we saw Series 11 was definitely not the most well-loved or well-received series, I think we all know this, but it was definitely something new. And then along comes Series 12, which feels like a lot of that is traded in for A, a better series in my opinion, and B, a lot of familiar RTD tropes, which is slightly disappointing, with Series 12 having Jadoon, Captain Jack, The Master, Gallifrey, all that sort of stuff laid in.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's, in one sense, Series 12 is a bit more exciting to watch. It's got a bit more energy, a bit more passion. And at first it does kind of feel like Chris Chibnall is finally doing something a bit more ambitious. I don't mind having a low-key series starter, but if it's true and he only had a 3-series plan over 5 years, then wasting 10 episodes on a very, very low-key series, I don't know, seems a little bit of a waste. If you were doing 5 series and you were committed to 5 series of this Doctor over a 5-year plan, I could almost say, well, yeah, do 1 low-key series and then build and build and build, establish the characters, and then you go big. But it kind of felt like it was too low-key and then too big at the same time with Series 12, and it's very disjointed for me.
It feels a lot like an emulation of the 10th Doctor recently, to be honest, with everything that's been happening in Series 12 and all those familiar ideas, not to mention the repeated use of the 10th Doctor and all other mediums at the moment. It does feel that Chibnall doesn't have 100% confidence in his own sort of flavour of the show, although that might be influenced by the fact his main idea, The Timeless Child, was thought up of during the 80s and like Trial of a Time Lord, I believe, and I don't think he's really changed anything in his head since then, so he definitely doesn't have this flavour he wanted to go for other than Series 11, which was just a bit bland.
Yeah, I think I would have a bit. I have a bit of a counter argument with The Timeless Child. I don't necessarily like some of the elements, but some elements of it I do like. And actually, The Timeless Child for me was the first time I thought, "Oh, this is Chibnall's Doctor Who. This is where he wants to go. This is where he wants to do something different." And I think it was the cost of a lot of elements of Doctor Who, a lot of stuff that had been built up over the years, but I do think there was some ambition there, and even though I wasn't as fond of some of the execution, and we'll go into The Timeless Child a bit more, it does give me a little bit of cautious hope that if that ambition has grown over series 12 and he's finally doing something with the Timeless Child arc, which is more unique to his era as showrunner, more unique to the 13th Doctor, then maybe this six-part series 13, which essentially is a six-part Doctor Who series as opposed to six individual episodes, maybe we're going to see his ambition finally come to the fore. I don't necessarily think that he has the skill and talent of Moffat and Russell T. Davies to absolutely deliver on all that, but there's a little bit of a cautious excitement for me that actually maybe we're going to see something a little bit different too.
I would hope so, because we should probably clarify now, we're not against the Timeless Child idea, as a lot of other people are. Not to say we absolutely adore it either. But hopefully with, yes, this six-part series and these three specials, Chibnall's going to be able to wrap up this arc, this idea, in a way which comes to some sort of satisfaction and doesn't end up forcibly throwing RTD, a new Doctor, into a scenario they don't want to deal with. Say if the arc's unfinished, or it ends in something which drastically impacts the entire universe or something, and then he leaves.
I think there are a few things that we should probably lay the groundwork for here on our thoughts. So I think firstly that we actually quite like the idea of a female Doctor. It does give something new to the show. I think that's really good.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, so fully supportive of a female Doctor, and I think Jodie Whittaker is good, but just is not giving the best material to work from. I think the Timeless Child is an interesting concept, not necessarily well executed, and it does throw a lot of things into the fire that were developed over the years on Doctor Who. I think the six-part story could be really interesting. It's nothing new to Doctor Who, this idea of we're doing something brand new to Doctor Who. Yes, it's kind of new for modern Doctor Who. I guess the closest would have been series 6 with the ongoing storyline with the Silence and Matt Smith's Doctor, maybe.
Yeah.
But even then, that's still quite close, like the Rossi Davies series arcs. But I think they've done it before. They've done it with The Key to Time. They've done it with The Trial of Time Lord. So a series which has an overall narrative and each story is part of a bigger story is not, say, something new to Doctor Who, but maybe it's something a little bit new for modern Doctor Who.
Mm.
And I think the other thing I want to kind of lay out here as well is this whole idea of Doctor Who has become too political, because that really, really bugs me. You've got John Pertwee and the Green Death, which is all about environmental issues. You've got, you mentioned before, Margaret Thatcher and capitalism in Sylvester McCoy's Doctor Who. There were countless examples of Doctor Who being political. It looks at social, moral and political issues and frames them in really interesting sci-fi stories. So the idea that Doctor Who has suddenly become really political feels very false to me and feels like people jump on the bandwagon of why Doctor Who doesn't work anymore, why suddenly a female Doctor is a terrible idea. No, of course it's not. It's a great concept. The Doctor is an alien. Why can't they be male or female or whatever gender they want to be? Why can't they be something different to a human? Why can't you have a green scaly Doctor for a series? You know, you could do. You could have a blob of jelly as a Doctor. I'm not sure how it would work, but the Doctor could be anything, really. And Doctor's an alien, so he doesn't have to conform to what we think the Doctor should be.
Yeah, this whole idea of, oh, it's too woke, too political, Chibnall's killed the show with his messaging. While, yes, okay, sometimes the messaging could have been laid on a bit more subtle. Case in point, the ending of Orphan 55, which I knew while watching that for the first time that it was going to rile up a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think with Orphan 55, the message was great. The execution was like, wow, okay, a little bit heavy-handed. It didn't have any subtlety to it, but the message was good. I have no problem. It was a great message to give.
Yeah, definitely. Because if you look at Doctor Who as a show, it's been inherently political since the beginning. You can go back just not far to Capaldi's era, and you see some episodes like Oxygen or Thin Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go back to the McCoy era, the Colin Baker era. The entire John Pertwee era is basically political messaging, but people don't take issue with that. But when people make this argument of, oh, it's too political, my go-to response to them is to look at the 9th ever story of the show, Planet of Giants, starting season 2 with William Hartnell. It's got a big eco-message running throughout it. It has been there since the start.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing, I'm going to ban this word woke. I hate the word woke.
Agreed.
It's a way of trying to dismiss environmentalism, equality. It's not about being ultra-left. It's basically about people being respectful of each other. People just having decency and compassion and humanity. And the idea of woke really, really riles me up. And if that gets bad comments on this podcast, that's your choice, because it's part of the culture we're living in, the culture society we're living in at the moment. And I know we're going to be political ourselves on this podcast, but I think it's a wider issue with society at the moment. And I think that's probably bleeding into some of the comments about Dog 2 currently.
Yeah, very much agreed that society as a whole right now is questionable and a bit messed up, honestly. But what you were saying about people taking the word woke as a defence against things they don't like, I mentioned earlier about how a lot of the hate in the fandom has had an impact on my enjoyment for this era. And over these last 4 years, the hate's been building and building and building, and it just has such a severe impact on not just enjoying this era of the show, but to be honest, the whole franchise in general.
Yeah, I think so. You see it in Doctor Who, you see it in Star Trek, you see it in Star Wars, all the Marvel, all the big franchises, you're going to have it now, unfortunately. So there's amazing, great fandoms, and you'll see so much joy and love and passion for Doctor Who, and you'll still hate, you'll see hate as well. It's unfortunate, but it's there. So with that in mind, we said at the beginning we're going to try and keep this quite positive, aren't we?
Yeah.
Given our kind of political stance, and I'm sure there'll be some other discussions around that as we go into this episode. But let's start with something really positive. I know we touched upon it briefly in our last episode. What are the best things about Jodie Whittaker's era as a Doctor?
Things that come to mind immediately. Graham, he's a brilliant character. I love him from the off, and once again proves how comedian stunt casting can actually work, which is why I hold out hope for Dan in series 13.
Yeah, I love Graham. Real, brought so much warmth to the show.
Also, characters like Sacha Dhawan's Master, which, while, yeah, kind of impacts the whole Missy redemption arc, and people don't like this incarnation as much sometimes, I've also seen a lot of love for him as the best thing from this era.
I would kind of agree. I think, yes, it does regress some of the Missy storyline. The one thing about the Master is that he could be from any era. He could be previous to Missy, could be post-Missy. I guess it doesn't really matter too much, unless they do something down the line to connect Missy and Sacha Dhawan's Master. I'm quite happy with his performance. And yes, there are some issues again of how his actions with Gallifrey in the Timeless Child episode, I think, which I'll get onto. I love him, and his reveal was one of the most joyous moments of her second series as Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, it was probably my favourite moment so far, other than that line from The Witchfinders I mentioned last episode.
Yeah, didn't see it coming, which was great. I was like, wow. It's the first time I was surprised by this era of Doctor Who, I think.
And then that comes in again a bit later with Fugitive of the Jadoon and Captain Jack's return, which was brilliant.
It was fun and unexpected, and yeah, I know there are issues with John Barrowman's conduct, which we don't condone in any way. It was lovely to see Jack again in that one, and in the last episode, Revolution of the Daleks as well. So that's fine. If that's Jack done now, I'm quite happy with that. It was nice to see him again. Yeah, again, a very Ross T. Davies trope going back to either the show, but I don't mind that. I like when old characters come back. I'd quite happy to see other characters come back if it works, you know. We also would like some classic companions like Leader or Ace to come back, or Romana, definitely. But if it works, you know, if it doesn't work, trying to force it in shouldn't come at the cost of storytelling. But sometimes it's nice to have just a bit of fun. Doctor Who can be fun, and I think that's what Jack brought to the show in Series 12.
Yeah, certainly. Like, don't shoehorn in River Song for the sake of it or something if her story is complete, for example.
Well, I would welcome River Song if they could get it right as well. I'd love to see River Song with a modern Doctor.
Oh yeah, 100%. River is a brilliant character. And then also thinking of great things about this era, I really love Ashad, the Lone Cyberman. He was a great character. Shame he got killed off so abruptly.
He was an effective villain. I liked him. He was so much better than Tim Shaw.
Oh, yes. To be fair, we had a bit of a laugh when Tim Shaw was announced, because...
Yes, my old university friend, who Ben knows, is called Tim Shaw. So when he turned up on screen, Tim Shaw? I was like, I know Tim Shaw. It's quite funny. But it's more of an inside joke for us, I think.
And no, he doesn't have teeth stuck to his face, don't worry.
No.
And then also the reveal of Joe Martin's Doctor.
Yes.
That was something like, oh, okay. And yes, I know that raises canonical inconsistencies at the moment. Is she pre-Hartnell? Why does she have the police box? Is she Season 6B? Which is something I'd quite like, actually, if she was in between Troughton and Pertwee.
That'd be fun.
And I know canonical inconsistencies is a huge thing with the franchise as a whole. Canon doesn't really exist in that sense as it does in other things.
It's very, very loose. You have to play it quite loose to reappreciate Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And while Joe Martin was a great reveal and a great presence, had a lot more command than Whittaker, which I think is quite a popular opinion, I don't personally rate her against the other Doctors as of yet, because I just feel there's not enough of her in my eyes to stick her in a ranking above Peter Davison or something.
Yeah, I kind of agree. She had a really good presence. I mean, she was only the Doctor for half an episode, and then she popped up briefly in The Timeless Children. I think had Chibnall decided to stay on and do another Doctor, like the previous showrunners, and Joe Martin had been the Doctor, I'd been very, very happy with that. I think she made a really good impression, and I'd like to see more of her. I don't think that will happen now. I don't think Larsley Davis will want to... It's always a fresh start with a new showrunner. Generally, there's a new Doctor and a new companion. I think we saw that with Larsley Davis through to Stephen Moffat, and we saw it again with Stephen Moffat through to Chris Chibnall. You know, I would have quite happy seen more Bill going through into Series 11. I love Bill, but I understand why her journey was done. Obviously, narratively, as well as it's a clean slate. And, you know, the original idea was that David Tennant may have stayed on for one more series, and I think that would have been quite fun to see how Series 5 would have played as the 10th Doctor Swan Song. But again, Matt Smith, amazing, and that dynamic with Amy, River and Rory was so good that I'm quite happy to have that clean slate. You know, in classic era, you would have a new show on a same Doctor, like Tom Baker's era, for example, but it's going to be a clean slate. So as much as I would have liked to have seen more Joe Martin the Doctor, and we may very well see this in the final 9 episodes we're going to get, the 6 yes. episode series and 3 specials, I really hope she does come back, but I reckon that's it done for her as well.
Yeah, to be fair, I never was a keen advocate for her as 14, but that's not because of anything against her, just because I thought, well, if we've already met her, then, oh, that sort of takes the whole joy out of things.
But that makes it interesting. The closest that we've had is Capaldi's Doctor tone up very briefly with the eyebrows in Day of the Doctor. I think it would be lovely to set up a Doctor. It'd have to be on the same showrunner, I think, like Chibnall, but having the next Doctor weaving through the second half or the previous Doctor's run could be quite fun.
Oh yeah, 100%. As you were saying about clean slates, not only do you have, like, David Tennant and Peter Capaldi definitely were not jumping on points for their first series. they relied very heavily on the previous Doctor. I also see that in Classica as well, like, Spearhead from Space is quite a new jumping on point, where the robot is, but also isn't quite new in that aspect.
Yeah, well, robot's very much a Pertwee-style script, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was written by Barry Letts, I believe, who was a showrunner of that era.
I believe so.
I think it's Ark in Space when you start to see Philip Hinchcliffe's era of Doctor Who really kick off. But yeah, okay, so we've talked about some favourite moments there, some favourite characters as well. So let's just quickly flip through some of our favourite episodes. So let's talk about Series 11 first. What was the first episode that made an impact to you?
Probably Rosa. I mean, I enjoyed the previous two, but Rosa was the episode where I went, wow, okay, this is actually really great. And it probably remains one of my favourite historicals, on TV at least.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff in there, and it doesn't jump at me as a classic, but there's some really great material to work on that episode, and some a really great message, and the treatment of Yaz and Ryan, for example, in the episode is nicely explored as well. And of course, the scene on the bus is great, and but it's interesting how they can't interfere with his moments as well. As much as they do interfere, how much they don't interfere, I think the villain is just a waste of space in that episode. It doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, he's only there to provide a catalyst for the TARDIS crew to be like, right, well, we need to quickly nudge this back because he nudged this so we can get Rosa Parks back on track.
Yeah, that didn't work. Going back to the previous two episodes, let's talk briefly about every episode, actually, just a quick couple of points. So the woman who fell to Earth, I thought was a really good introduction for Ryan, and was then wasted for the rest of the series. He struggles with dyspraxia, and his relationship with Graham and Grace were lovely. I love Grace, actually. I would love to see more Grace. It's almost like, oh, she's the best character, and then she's gone. But there were some nice moments there with that. I thought the Ghost Monument looked stunning. It was the first time I really got to feel the music from the new composer.
Yeah. To be fair, I find with the new composer, I don't like his music much. I much prefer Murray Gold, mainly because this new guy, Segun Akinola, his scores are very atmospheric, and sometimes just you can barely hear it, and it's just almost noise on the wind, which works at times, but also doesn't quite impact as well as it should. But he has some great tracks in there.
Yeah, I think because the Ghost Monument was very much his big scenic journey through a desert, you kind of got that sense of the music on that episode that maybe you hadn't had previously. But yeah, some good stuff there. Again, the storyline was a little bit loose, didn't quite work together. You get in kind of like Susan Lynch, who's a great actress. You probably won't know much of her, but I've seen her in many things, and she was great. And Art Malik was a bit wasted, you know. It was that was always quite good, but never quite getting there. But there were some, in those early episodes, in fact, the first three episodes, there's some really great character work. We've some work with the companions. You really get a sense that Chibnall is doing the sort of work he did on Broadchurch, where he's really investing in the characters. And so the first three episodes, I was like, I'm not wowed, but I'm really quite intrigued by where these characters are going to go. And then I think it just doesn't really progress beyond that.
Yeah, agreed. Like, the scene with the TARDIS in Ghost Monument as well, that's a brilliant scene.
Yeah.
But laying the groundwork for the characters, it does feel, and I know this was a common complaint during Series 11 as a whole, Graham and Ryan, they got some development throughout the series. Yaz was just kind of there. And then I know in Series 12, it almost swapped over, and Graham and Ryan were just up there. Graham was there for comedy relief. Comic relief, and Yaz got a bit of development, which hopefully she continues throughout Series 13. And one more point I'm going to raise here about Grace. I would probably have preferred if Ryan had been the one who died, and it was Graham and Grace who stayed on the TARDIS.
That would have been interesting.
Mainly, well, obviously that would have, like, gotten rid of the whole Graham grieving for Grace impact and why he chooses to stay on the TARDIS in Arachnids, but also because, no offence here, but Honestly, I find Ryan and Toes and Cole's acting slightly wooden, and it just doesn't gel with me that much.
Yeah, I think he had a very strong start. His first episode was great, and there were some moments in those first three episodes, which I think the first three episodes, I'm going to say, were a solid start to the era of Doctor Who.
Yes.
It was a slow burn, but you got some lovely character work. You got some lovely work with Ryan there, and with his relationship with Graham as well. And Grace was a really standout character. And it looked beautiful, it looked lovely, the music was lovely. You got a sense of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor as the inventor, which was quite fun too. And then you got Rosa delivering a really kind of powerful message. So it was onto a solid start.
Yeah, and it keeps that format, which has been throughout the revival of the first three episodes, going modern day, future, historical.
Absolutely. Then we get Arachnids in the UK.
This was the first episode where I began to see the hate for this era. Because prior to Arachnids, I'd see nothing. It was just like, oh, this era started, okay. And then when Arachnids came around, I saw a lot of people hating, say, oh, it's getting worse each week. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then that started the chain, I feel.
Yeah. I don't think the series suddenly became terrible. But I think Arachnids in the UK was, like the Saranga conundrum, were Chibnall supposedly really letting loose then and showing, okay, this is what my era of Doctor is going to be. He wrote the first five episodes, so it should have been, yes, you got the character work of the first episode, then we do a trip to the future, trip to the past, you know, we really establish the time and space element of Doctor Who, great. Then what's next? You get Arachnids in the UK, which I think is the most terrible title ever. It's like a working title that never got changed. And
it was actually, I know this for a fact, it was like a competition Chibnall put out like to the writers for the series. Oh, what should I name this episode? And I think it was the writer of It Takes You Away, Ed Heim, who picked it. Oh. It was either him or Pete McTeague.
Which are both quite good, but yeah, absolutely terrible title, terrible villain. I wasn't particularly a fan of him when he came back in Revolution as well.
To be fair, he is a bit more bearable in Revolution, and I do expect to see him return in series 13. It feels like he's got a bit more to do, plus feels like he's got a bit more left. And also, just briefly touching what I was talking about with Ryan, I think his performance in Revolution of the Daleks was his best one.
Yeah, I kind of agree with all that. Then we have the Sudanga conundrum. It's not your favorite, is it?
No, it is not. If this was Chibnall showing his hand, this is what my ear is going to be like. To then have an episode as boring as Saranga Conundrum. It was the first episode I watched and was sitting there bored. Like, why? I like the Pting. That's a fun villain. But the rest, it looks good as well. The setting,
it's beautiful.
Looks great. Yeah. But the story, the plot itself, it just loses me. And I was adamant that I'd already found the worst episode of Whittaker's era. That wasn't until Series 12 came along. I'll touch upon that later.
Yeah, I think Arachnids in the UK is worse, but it's very, very bland, paint by numbers, with an alien that feels like it's designed to sell plushy toys, nothing more.
I like to call it the Lilo and Stitch reject.
Did they actually release merchandise of the Pting?
I don't think they have, actually. I have a thought that they should wait until Series 13, then release a plushie of a monster from each series. Like, do the Pting for Series 11, the Jadoon with hair from Series 12, and then Series 13, whatever's in there, and then you have the plushie set.
Maybe, yeah, because there's no other reason for the Pting, you know. Adding the alien xenomorph, it's suddenly a much more interesting storyline there. Demons of the Punjab, then. I thought this was a pretty decent episode. Though, even though it's a Yaz episode, there wasn't much jazz to it.
Yeah. I mean, again, I found it a bit dull on first viewing, but it's kind of grown on me. I don't love it. I know a lot of people name it as their favourite Whittaker episode.
Interesting.
But it's got a good idea to it. Yeah. And some of the music, like the Indian rendition of the theme, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's got quite some harrowing moments. And I really love the Thajarians as well. I kind of want them to return as the assassins they were, but then I'm in two minds, like, A, that would be cool, but B, would that lessen the impact of them in Demons?
See, I actually think it should have been a pure historical.
That's a valid point.
I think there's enough material there to make it a pure historical episode. Yeah, make it. I actually think Rosa and Demons should have been pure historicals in the vein of the proper classic black and white Doctor Who. I think they would have worked perfectly.
Yeah, like Demons, you don't need any interference.
Yeah.
And then Rosa, you could easily have just made it, oh, the TARDIS landing accidentally let out a wave of Archon energy which disrupted something, so the TARDIS team need to put it on track or something.
Yeah, just something simple. Like there, the TARDIS team being there disrupts the events with Rosa Parks and they have to fix it. That's simple. And there's a really great story to be told there. Same with Demons of Punjab. I do like the aliens in Demons,
yeah,
but I don't think they were needed. Then we have Kablam, which I think is probably more of a favourite episode for a lot of people, though it does have some strong opinions the other way as well.
Yeah, people like to take issue with the pro-Amazon stance, the doctors working with the company, both sides, nah, kill the white dude. Everyone seems to really think this year was against white men, which is pure BS.
I think that's indicative of the culture we're living in, unfortunately.
Yeah. I really love Kablam. It was the first episode of the series where I was watching and I was like, this feels like proper, fun Doctor Who. And it's probably the Whittaker episode I go back to most frequently. Because the Doctor is great in it. Graham is as great as ever. Ryan is okay. I mean, he's never the best. Yaz, she's decent. I like her. But overall, it's just got a very fun atmosphere to it.
It is fun, and it's a very Ross T. Davies style episode. You can see David Tennant and Rose in there. It would work just as well.
I also love the callback to the Fez.
Yes. Kablam is fun. I think Kablam is the first of one of three episodes, which are probably the strongest point of the series.
Fair enough.
Because I actually really like the Witchfinders. Again, I'm going to say that there is no episode of Series 11 that I think is a proper classic. They all have their weaknesses. I think it's the writing and the direction of the performance. It just all feels a little bit lackluster at times. But The Witchfinders, again, is another really fun Ross T. Davies style episode. I think Alan Cumming is great as King James. I love his relationship with the characters, particularly Ryan. That's quite fun. And the villains at the end, again, you could absolutely see David Tennant facing off against those. But it's fun. It's atmospheric. It has a fun energy to it.
I agree. Yeah, Alan Cumming, brilliant. I'm glad they did go down the route of, well, the Doctor's a woman, so no, she cannot be in charge. That is impossible in this time period.
Yeah, they had to address that at some point.
Yeah, and then they put it on trial. Like, it's nice that they don't really have to get hung up on her as a female Doctor throughout the series, but I'm also glad they do address it when it comes up. And I also really like Morax as a villain. I know a lot of people ain't about it. But Series 11 in general had a bit of a monster problem.
They're all very, ugh, just like those there. They're nothing big and memorable.
Other than the Pting. Which Pting, is memorable.
See, I think the aliens in the Witchfinders are probably the best aliens of the series, which maybe says something itself.
That or the postmen in Kablam.
They're memorable in the same way, like the angels from Voyage of the Damned are, but I'm not sure I would say they're...
the Heavenly Host.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're brilliant. It takes you away then. I think is mostly a gorgeous-looking episode with some good atmosphere to it.
It looks stunning. And it's definitely an episode of three halves. I probably prefer the first half, like the atmosphere, the abandoned cottage, what's happening here? Ooh, there's a mirror. And Ryan gets a good episode to do stuff in, his relationship with Hannah growing throughout. And I am slightly annoyed. They did end up cutting a monster from this episode. There was originally going to be what I saw described as a Slender Mole, and then they just removed it, which did upset me, but it's still an atmospheric episode. And does wonders with Graham and Grace throughout. And I know some people, they don't like the frog on the chair. I don't mind it.
I didn't mind it. It was a bizarre but heartfelt moment too. I kind of feel like Witchfinders and It Takes You Away are the two strongest episodes of Series 11 for me.
Fair enough. Doctor Who's always been a bit bizarre in its ideas.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that continue over.
Yeah, and Kevin Eldon as Ribbons, it was great. I would like to see more of that. But there you go. And then we have the finale. The
Battle of Branskor av Kolos.
Always good with your pronunciations. By the way, just for the listeners, how do you pronounce the Slovene home planet?
Oh, Vaxcoicofallopatorius.
There you go. Just rolls off the tongue.
Yep.
So, the battle then, the final episode.
Doesn't have a battle.
No, it's really... I mean, I would say resolution feels more like a finale.
Yeah, I think people like to accept that as the finale to Series 11. Like, they try and accept Remembrance of the Daleks as the unofficial 25th anniversary.
Yeah. So the battle brings back Tim Shaw, and it's like, huh, okay, you were kind of okay. I quite didn't mind him in The Woman Who Fell to Earth. Then he comes back as a villain, and you're thinking, this is where you're going from. And I think back to the first series finales of all the previous shows. So you've got the Daleks and the Dalek Empire. You've got Daleks and Cybermen together. You've got the Master. You've got Davros and All Star on Earth. You've got the Master again. Then you've got the Pandaic and the universe being destroyed. Then you've got universe being going all timey-wimey with the Doctor being assassinated. Then you've got the Topless Time being destroyed by the Great Intelligence, leading to Dare the Doctor. Then you've got
Missy making all the every dead person into Cybermen. Then you have Time Lords again. And then you get Master, Missy, and Mondasian Cybermen at once. And then you get Tim Shaw.
Yeah, it's like, really? The whole episode is just lackluster. It's like it ends the series on a whimper. You expect it to build and build to something, and it goes, that's it.
Yeah, like they almost hint at there's going to be some conflict with Graham. You have that scene where he says to the Doctor, I don't care what you think, I am going to kill Tim Shaw. And then he gets there and he's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Let's just lock him in a pod, Ryan.
Yeah, it's all very lackluster.
Why was the sniper bots back? They did not need to be there.
Oh, I don't know. It's just a bit... It's a meh episode.
Yeah. And a lot of references to past years, though.
Yeah, that's true, but...
That was nice.
Learning so far, I can go with that.
Yeah. I saw... There's a ranking I've been seeing on Twitter where people put every episode of the show up to Revolution of the Daleks.
Oh, Herald of Creation's doing that, isn't he?
Yes. Shout out there. Against each other. And I saw Ranskor was the worst voted episode. I'm always not great. I don't think it's the worst the show's ever made.
No, I think there's many more, but it's
the
very...
Crusade.
Okay. A controversial historical opinions there. I haven't
not
seen,
like that.
I haven't seen The Crusade, so I can't argue that one. But it's a reaction. I think Timeless Children was very low down as well. I think that's a reaction to the current year of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So let's move on. A very blah episode. Doesn't do anything. It ends the series on a whimper. And then we get Resolution, the first New Year's Day special, because it's no longer a Christmas special, which I'm kind of okay with, because it's only so far I can go with the Christmas element. So Resolution, then. I like this one. I don't think it delivers on the scale it's going for at the beginning, with the idea of this Dalek separated across three different locations and the threat to the universe. It's all very low-key again. It doesn't have a real energy to it. It does remind me, though, and I know you haven't seen this, of Chibnall's work on Torchwood Series 2, which was fairly decent. So there's some
that's
good stuff
good.
There. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I find Resolution a bit overrated in the long run. I'm glad the Dalek did turn up. I was hoping for that. I know a lot of fans theorise. Slightly disappointed they didn't call it Resolution of the Daleks. Because then you've got Resolution and Revolution of the
yes.
Daleks. Either call it Of the Daleks and Of the Daleks, or just call it Resolution, Revolution. Stop this. This is not fun.
Oh, well. It's a play on New Year's Day title, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
But yeah, it could have been Resolution and Revolution of the Daleks, definitely.
Does a nice roundup to what Series 11 was going for,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, it's a better as a finale, definitely. Okay, let's move on to Series 12 then. We didn't have a New Year's Day special because Spyfall Part 1 was a New Year's Day episode.
People actually thought this was just a one-off episode, which does go to show how this era really needs to fix its marketing. I really hope the 14th Doctor and RTD get back into the marketing.
Yeah, there's a mix. With Moffat style, there are too many things ruined, like the Master's Return in Series 10, certainly. It was like, it's telling too much, whereas this one doesn't tell you enough. And I think it needs a bit more oomph to its marketing to get people interested, particularly as people are as a whole getting... It's hard to say, because I'm sure that those are absolutely lovely and lapping. Every time Doctor comes on, they love it. And also, there are many casual fans that go, oh, Doctor Who's on, I'll watch that. You know, we are passionate about Doctor Who. We talk about it, we read about it, we listen to it, we watch it. But there are those who go, oh, well, yeah, what shows? I like to watch this, I like to watch this show. Oh, Doctor Who's on, I'll watch that. And they're casual viewers. So that'll be fine, but you've got to have that balance of attracting people to the show.
The RTD sort of level. I wasn't watching the show at the RTD era, so I'm not sure how quite the marketing was done, but by what I can guess, it wasn't nothing and it wasn't loads.
Yeah, for my memory, it worked quite well.
Like, every time Chibnall is going in an event, he looks like he doesn't want to be there because he's going to have to reveal something and he doesn't want to.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at Series 12 then. So Series 11 as a whole was a little bit blah, had some nice moments in there, some looked very pretty at times, I think. The music was lovely. It started off with some strong character work and then kind of just petered out a bit. And the best moments are probably along some of those Ross Lee Davies homage-style elements as well.
Yes.
Okay, Spyfall then, part one and part two.
So, I know this is definitely unpopular. I prefer part two to part one. I know a lot of people don't tend to like part two. Like, I'm not sure why. Is it because of the Master, because of destroying Gallifrey, because it trades everything in for an RTD era thing, or just doesn't follow part one? Either way, I always found part one a bit dull up until they went to the party and the Master reveal. But I recently rewatched this two-parter, and actually, I quite enjoy part one now. And as a whole, it's probably one of Whittaker's best stories, and I love seeing the Master with the Doctor and the James Bond homage.
Yeah, that's fun.
Even though there is that questionable moment in part two with the Master and the Nazis and the Doctor throwing him to them.
Yeah, I agree. I actually prefer episode two because you really get to see Sacha Dhawan as the Master have fun. I think in part two, Ada Lovelace and Noor Khan are wasted as characters. They could be no more done with them in the style of Rosa Parks, but it's fun, and it does do the same thing as The Sound of Drums, the companions as fugitives, which again for us, okay, we're just going to repeat old Ross Lee Davies tropes here as well. And I do think Lenny Henry,
he just sort of leaves.
He does wasted. There's a waste of characters and talent in this episode.
Yeah, you get Stephen Fry, who's there for a bit, and then suddenly, bang, he's gone.
Yeah, he goes far too quickly. I was looking forward to seeing Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry is wasted. Lenny Henry is ultimately wasted. The characters of Khan and Lovelace are just kind of, they're good. I would like to see more of it, and again, they're just wasted. But I would say Spyfall Part 1, it's just a lot of fun. It's got a lot of energy. It's got that festive special vibe to it in there. It's just a little bit over the top, like the whole chase sequence and the casino bits. I just
Snap.
Really fun. Yeah.
That bit where the Doctor's playing the card. Snap. Is that not the game? That's amazing.
That might be one of my favourite 13th Doctor moments, actually. And yeah, the reveal was great. The reveal was unexpected. I remember thinking, I'm actually having a good time with this episode. Possibly the first time I'm actually really enjoying this. The closest I think was probably The Witchfinders. And part two is darker and some things don't work. And don't get me started on Gallifrey, because we'll talk about Gallifrey as one of Time's children.
I'm glad part one was dedicated to Terence Dix as well. That's quite respectful for them to have done.
Yeah.
Although I do find it a bit questionable how as well as the whole throwing the Master to the Nazis bit in part two, that episode was also going to show Khan's death, which historically, she was taken to a concentration camp and shot through the head, and they filmed that. So I'm glad they sort of cut that, because that would have been a bit...
Completely unnecessary, I agree. But I think what Spyfall Part 1 and 2 does is show the energy that was lacking from Series 11.
Yes.
It doesn't always work. It's very disjointed. There's a lot of characters and actors wasted, but there are some fun moments, particularly anything with Sacha Dhawan in.
Although it does start off the trend which was in Series 11, but mainly the 13th Doctor committing a lot of immoral acts. She does a lot of questionable things that her run.
Yeah. Let's move on to Orphan 55 then.
Ah, the infamous Benny.
Benny! I think the monsters in Order 55 are great.
They look good. They don't do much, but...
The dregs.
I like the tension where the Doctor's trying to absorb air from the leader who's sleeping. That's quite a good tense moment. But the whole... Like, the whole hyphen with the three, what was that about? And the mother and daughter subplot, why... Benny was just there for the memes, essentially. The ending, as we touched on earlier, very unsubtle.
Yeah.
They needed to do that a lot better.
Yeah, great message, but the direction is appalling.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there were some wasted talent. James Buckley, I've seen before. Laura Fraser, I've seen stuff. You know, really good actors and actresses here. And just wasted. It's very poor in its direction. But the dregs are amazing.
It's a shame because this was written by the same guy who wrote It Takes You Away.
Which I really liked. I know. And I think that was good. But
also, they just literally steal a twist from the first story of Trial of a Time Lord. I was watching that, they reveal the twist and I'm like, you just stolen the exact thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot of people won't have seen Trial of a Time Lord. But seeing a twist from an earlier Doctor Who doesn't feel the best approach.
Yeah.
Do so at least that ties in is cleverly done around that. But no, it's it's this, it's Earth, And you're like, anyone who's a fan of Doctor Who will go, yeah, that's happened before.
Yeah, but they do the exact thing. Both Trial and Orphan 55 both reveal it by the Doctor seeing a train sign underground.
Maybe that was a homage to doing that, I don't know.
Maybe. But, interesting though, considering Chibnall didn't like Trial when it was. I believe he's come round to it a bit now.
The bits of Trial I like. But yeah, Verboys is one of the best Sixth Doctor story, which you said last time. But it's a poorly executed story with a great message and a great monster.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror. This is my favourite 13th Doctor story.
It's probably my favourite of Series 12. Used to be Fugitive, but I think Tesla just takes it now. It's less fun than Fugitive.
I think it's a lot of fun, though.
I know. It is a fun story. I do really like it. And while watching it, I was thinking, this is probably the underrated gem of 13's run and needs a lot more appreciation. The casting for Tesla was brilliant.
Yes. Gorn Vishnik. Vishnik, I think I pronounced it. He's great.
I didn't realise that was him in the trailer until I showed one of my friends and he just saw in the trailer. I was like, oh, is that Tesla? Mm. So that was nice.
Yeah, and Robert Glenister, I've seen several things as well. Yeah. He's great as Edison.
He was, I forgot what character he played. Morgus? No, it wasn't Morgus. He was in Caves of Androzani. Might be Morgus.
He was in Androzani too. Mm.
And the Scythra, they're quite cool. I like them. I kind of want them to be the cousin species of the Rachnos. I really want that to happen.
Yeah, it almost felt like they should have been. Again, it was like a homage to the Rachnos. Very Russell T. Davies, but yes. I think what I really liked about this episode, you saw the Doctor in her element. You saw the Doctor as the inventor, and I think that's her thing. You see the Doctor invent things in other stories, but I think this is where she really shines. You saw it at the end of The Woman Who Fell to Earth. You see it in this episode.
You see it in Demons of the Punjab.
You do as well. The Doctor as an inventor, you see the energy and the spark come alive in her. And I think this is where they should have gone. And I think because they're probably going to go down a darker, more serialised route, which I understand why.
I really hope so. 13 does need to go a lot darker, in my opinion.
Yeah. But I wish we had more of this throughout the first two series where it's a bit more fun.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, this really needs a lot more love as an episode.
It's a fun episode.
Plus, the title's brilliant.
Yeah. Fugitive of the Jadoon, then. This was the second episode of Series 12 to have some, I think, much-loved reveals.
Yeah. I like how, obviously, Chibnall not really revealing much. He only revealed the Jadoon because it was necessary as they were going to be filming in broad daylight the next day in Gloucester. So that was quite fun, mid-2019, to see the Jadoon filming, be like, oh, okay, they're coming back. But also, it was a nice mask for the other surprises. John Barrowman renovating his house in Cardiff. And Joe Martin, known to be in that episode, but, oh yeah, she's playing a tour guide, little did we all know.
But you absolutely believe she was a tour guide caught up in this until the big twist. I think it's such a lovely twist, and it's... like the Master was a great twist, but that happens time and time again in Doctor Who. So I think while it was very well done, it's something Chibnall doing something that's been done many times before. Joe Martin's Doctor though was like, what the hell is going on here? This is something completely unexpected. And
well, not completely new, because we had something like this with the War Doctor, but...
True, actually, yeah. You write the War Doctor's there as well, so maybe it's not quite so new even then, but I really liked her performance as Doctor. I thought it was really exciting to see the two of them together. I don't think they've really made enough of what's really going on, particularly as the Doctor's incarceration after the end of Series 12 was very kind of quickly glossed over in Revolution of the Daleks.
Yeah, that was really... That was probably one of the things they marketed most about that episode, and then, oh yeah, it's just over.
But Jack was fun. It was a cameo. The issue I probably have is actually that this is very much one of those episodes that is setting up things that happen later on. It's setting up Joe Martin's Doctor, which is going to link to the TARDIS children. Mm. It's setting up Jack's return special.
Setting up the Lone Cyberman as well.
It is. It's setting up a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's a fun hour of television, but I couldn't actually tell you what it was really about.
I'm glad, to be honest, I think the fact the companions were only really there with Jack, and then after they were done, they were basically gone from half the episode. I think that works in its favour to properly focus on the 13th Doctor and the Fugitive Doctor.
It does. I also think it speaks to the issue of having three companions.
Yeah.
They don't get enough screen time, and there was an attempt to do stuff with them in Series 11. With Series 12, they're kind of just there for the most part. Yaz gets some stuff. We'll talk about in the next episode. Graham is just there for this series. He has some lovely work around Grace. And Graham is there just to be tied to Ryan, who isn't really doing anything himself. So I think Ryan and Graham don't get a lot to do. They push Yaz to the fore, which is good because she's going to continue on the show. But I don't think Ryan and Graham get really anything in the series. Okay, Praxeus then.
So, I mentioned before how Suranga was my least favourite episode of 13's run. Then Praxeus came about. Again, it commits what Suranga does and lots of other stories at the bottom of my overall episode ranking for every story. It's boring. I feel boring is the cardinal sin in Doctor Who episodes. You can be bad, but you can also be fun. Praxeus, it takes too long for the TARDIS team to even show up. I don't find it fun at all. And it does, in my eyes, waste the whole plastic pollution thing, because I had that idea ages ago, and then Big Finish did a tortured audio on that, so that disappointed me.
Yeah, with the Altons, yes.
Yeah, but then to have this plastic in the sea episode and then not use either the Sea Devils or the Autons, I feel that's a waste. It looks good. The spaceship underground looks great. The effect of the people suffering from Praxeus, that looked cool as well. Bit of some bad timing for the episode. But overall, it's the only episode of the revival I've only ever seen once.
See, I quite liked elements of Praxeus, but it's very much a fragmented episode. It never knows quite what it wants to be. Is it essentially the love story reunion between Jake and Adam? Is it about this disease? Is it about plastic pollution? Is it about Yaz coming to the fore as kind of more of a leader as other companions, which he does in this episode, to be fair? What is it about? And I can't tell you what it's about. It looks good. There were some nice moments. But I couldn't really tell you what's really going on. I don't really remember much apart from the astronauts and the black birds, or it was the practice stuff flying around. And that's really it. There's not much more to it. So I think it's one that gets a little bit lost in the mix of Series 12. But it's got... I don't know. Is it boring? Elements of it are boring, maybe, but it's also some exciting moments in there as well. So I don't know.
I do like the spaceship underground, though. That looked very cool. And it had a nice resolution, I think. I don't remember entirely, because, as I said, I haven't seen it.
Okay. What about Can You Hear Me?
No, I can't hear you. Can you speak up, please?
Oh, he's a comedian.
But no, Can You Hear Me? It's a nice episode. I liked it.
Yeah.
I quite like the Shigaskas, actually, although they are just the dream monsters. The callback to the Eternals and the Toy Maker and all that works well. But last time I watched it, I felt it did slightly drag in places. And for Elder Gods who have all this power, they're wrapped up really quickly, but that does allow for some Yaz character development, so...
Yeah, it's good to see Yaz get something to do and discussing her mental health struggles in the past as well, which I hope is explored more.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a really important thing to portray on screen as part of delivering that mental health is something that people suffer with, and it's okay to seek treatment. Obviously, you recognise that people struggle with this. Mm. So there's some really good stuff there with Yaz, but not enough for my liking. It's the only episode of the series, really, when you get, oh, Yaz has something of a backstory. This, and then her taking the lead role in the previous episode as well, gives something to do, which sets up nicely for some of the work in the finale, but not enough in my liking.
Yeah.
I think Can You Hear Me is like Praxis, another slightly disjointed episode that looks really good. I think Ian Gelder as Zelen is brilliant. He looks really good. It's quite atmospheric as well. I like the stuff in ancient Syria, but it doesn't really go anywhere, and I couldn't really tell you what it was about.
Gods that detach their fingers and finger you so you feel your worst nightmares, apparently.
Yeah. So, I remember it being very atmospheric.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched it since the original broadcast. It was quite atmospheric.
So I've watched it once, I think, since the original broadcast.
You know what? It strikes me. I don't think I've watched a single episode of The 30th Doctor since it was broadcast. So, I've seen every episode. And I've reviewed every episode as well. But I couldn't... the fact that I've been drawn back to watch them again maybe says something itself.
You've seen Woman and Ghost Monument because we previewed them. And then we watched them again.
Yeah. But yeah, once I've reviewed them. The Haunting of Villa Diodati, which is another probably highlight of the series to me, along with Nikola Tesla, is probably my other favourite episode of the series. Again, very atmospheric.
I said people named demons as their favourite of 13's run. This is the other one, which is very highly regarded. I like how they stick the Cybermen in earlier on as well.
Yeah.
And it's got some good work for 13, and a nice callback to Spyfall with Lovelace's father. But it is very much a story of two halves. You've got the first more atmospheric bit with, oh, there are ghosts in quotation marks, and then suddenly, oh, now we have the Cyberman. But yeah, it does do great work with the Doctor against the Cybermen. Her whole, this isn't a flat team structure, it's mountainous and I'm on top speech. And then when the Cyberman arrives and she leaves and says to the companions, you are staying here, I am not losing anyone else to them. I assume she's referring to Bill.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Yeah. I have listened to the Eighth Doctor Big Finish with Mary Shelley on this night, and I think that is a better story, but this is still a great episode. Doesn't quite give me fun vibes, but I enjoy watching it.
It's very atmospheric, and I think there's some, I love a good haunted house storyline, and this is a really good, a good gothic horror style one. And I think Patrick O'Kane's Ashad, the lone Cyberman, is great. I think it looks fantastic. This half damaged suit where you can see part of his face is very, very effective, and I think it makes a really great, a very creepy villain. And I like how they tie the Cybermen into Frankenstein as well, because that works too, and on many levels. So I think it's a real good, solid episode. I think the only reason I would put Nikola Tesla higher is because I think of what it does with the Doctor himself. It gives me something of the Doctor herself. This one is her, a bit more angry, a bit more traumatised by the past, things like Bill, for example, which I guess would have been fairly fresh in her mind still, and also her dealing with the trauma on Gallifrey, which I know we're going to come on to. So there's some very good stuff there, very atmospheric. I liked Haunting. I think Haunting and Nikola Tesla are two good episodes. Not great, but they're good. Then we come on to the finale. So Ascension, the Cybermen, and the Timeless Children. I think people generally prefer Ascension, don't they?
I find, yes. Ascension is a good episode. I really like it. The Cyberman, bringing back the Cybermen as well. That's a nice touch. And then the two halves with Graham, Yaz, Ravio and the others on the cyber ship with the Doctor, Ryan, and the other guy, I forget the name of, going to the border with Koshamus. And then intercutting that with the Brendan stuff.
Yes, that's really interesting. The Brendan was almost quite Moffat-y, isn't it, in his approach?
Also, the pre-titles, like, zooming into the floating cyberhead eye to go into the titles, that looked great.
Yeah.
I like the Master popping up at the end as well.
Yeah.
Just jumping through the border. Hello.
Yes, that's always fun. And I think when he comes back, he brings the energy with him. It's very good. It's very bleak, isn't it? I mean, between this and Orphan 55, it offers a very, very bleak future for the Doctor universe, particularly for humanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, Orphan, they said, was, like, a possible future. But Ascension is really in the Cyber War, which, honestly, we've heard about Cyber War a lot throughout the show, like Nightmare in Silver, Revenge of the Cybermen. But we've never actually seen it. A bleak birthday episode.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's good. I think there's some good stuff there. I think it's quite harrowing and bleak and desolate, but that adds some real tension to it, and it really separates the Doctor from the companions, which I guess leads to that schism, which results in the departure of Ryan and Graham in the New Year's Day special to follow. Then we get to the Timeless Children.
So, I like the episode. I enjoy it. Gallifrey looks beautiful, destroyed.
Yes.
Does that say anything psychopathic? I like the callbacks to assassinated presidents and loads of Gallifreyan history. The Cybermen planning to just become robots, I'm not quite sure where that came from.
No, it's rubbish.
And Ashlar dying so quickly is upsetting. But as a lot of people like to call it, it's the Master's slideshow presentation telling the Doctor everything.
Yeah, this is the trouble that with the 13th Doctor.
And Chibnall's writing in general, I feel.
Yeah.
He tells, not shows.
Yes. This personifies the issues I have with the 13th Doctor. So, let's look at the good first. I quite like the Timeless Children arc. It gives something new and fresh and exciting. And let's be blunt, Doctor Who has rebooted its mythology time and time again. It did it with the first regeneration. Mm. You know, the idea of changing your lead character is unheard of. You can change the companions all the time, that's fine. But the idea of the Doctor changing his appearance or her appearance is a great concept. And Doctor was rebooted time and time again. Some things have worked, some things have dropped. You know, if you go by the 8th Doctor, he's half human. That's been quietly never spoken of again.
Until Hellbent. I mean, if you look at what the 8th Doctor was going to be like with this TV series and look at the Leakley Bible and all that sort of stuff, that's a completely different show.
It is completely. So Doctor is constantly reinventing itself. Let's make no bones about it. Changing the mythology. Well, Russell T. Davies did it with the Time War and the loss of Gallifrey, which brought a really exciting new dimension to Doctor Who, particularly as Gallifrey itself was a law of diminishing returns in classic Doctor Who. You know, when you saw it in The Deadly Assassin, it was great. And then every time they came back, there's some great stuff there with the politics and the scheming, but they always became less and less inferior. They were so far removed from the Gallifrey teased in the War Games.
Yeah. Definitely the mysterious figures of authority.
Yeah. So the reboot is fine. I like the Timeless Children element. It adds something new and horrific to the Doctor's past. It allows Joe Martin's Doctor to kind of fit in there as well. It ties nicely to the Brains of Morbius theory as well.
I loved that moment where, like, she's going through the Matrix and she's, like, showing the memories and Morbius comes up. That was...
Yeah.
Great, I loved that.
That was great. So I have no problem with this all and the idea that Doctor herself... The Doctor is quite special, so why can't they be... Why can't the Doctor be the one responsible for the regeneration of all these people? It goes back kind of to the Cartmelier, which I know we're going to talk about as well.
Cartmelier master plan. Yeah.
Yes, the Doctor themselves were...
The Other.
The Other, which along with Rassilon and Omega were the three founding Time Lords. So it kind of works.
I understand, like, the arguments against the Doctor being the Timeless Child and they're all really special, and I personally do go with the people who hope it ends up revealed to actually be the Master. I think that works better.
Yeah, I think that might work quite well. The issues then. So, yes, the Doctor is very reactive. The Doctor is very passive and reactive in general. I'm not saying you should have a female doctor with bullshy alpha male qualities, because that doesn't work too. You know, the doctor is female and is suddenly made to be very passive to it going around her, particularly to male characters as well. So it does the doctor no favours. You know, if you're going to have a female doctor, have her strong, not in an alpha male kind of way, but don't have her regressive and very passive and being told things all the time. You know, the doctor needs to have some agency. The doctor has no agency in the TARDIS children. So while the actual ideas around it are great, I quite like it, it's quite new, exciting, and you're finally seeing Chibnall doing something with his Doctor Who, I don't think the Doctor's involvement is anything at all.
Yeah, you get that bit, like, towards the end where the Master and the Cybermasters, which look really cool.
They look great.
I feel they will return at some point as well, but the Doctor saying goodbye to her fam and then sending them off in the TARDIS to Earth, ready to blow up Gallifrey with the death particle, and she's like, will she do it? And Koshamish just comes along and says, go away, I'll do it.
Yeah. The other thing I have is, yes, the Cybermasters look great. I'll give you that. It craps over everything that's been done with Gallifrey to this point, because if you look at the Doctor Who story since it came back, well, if you look at the Doctor Who story in general, the Doctor escaped Gallifrey. He spent his time running from Gallifrey. Then he got pulled back in on time. He even became president. He was pulled away. Then the Time War happened, and he lost himself, and then Gallifrey was destroyed. That's a that's a great story. Then you find out you're dealing with his loss, dealing with the being last of the Time Lords. Then you get the Master, that connection that his worst enemy and his best friend together is his only tie to his own people. And then you get the great reveal in Day of the Doctor that actually Gallifrey, he saved Gallifrey, and the Doctor saved Gallifrey. Gives him hope. He's looking for Gallifrey. Then he eventually finds it. I think he finds it too soon in Hellbent, but I know we're going to talk about Hellbent in the future anyway. And then there's hope that Gallifrey's returned. You know, so after 50 years of running away from Gallifrey and then being destroyed, there's hope that Gallifrey's returned. There's a place where he may go home. And then goes, it's destroyed. And not only is it is a direct repeat of Rossi Davis again. Oh, Gallifrey's destroyed. It craps all over Day of the Doctor and Hellbent and the hope for the future of the Doctor. And I really, really hate it.
The controversy of seeing the Timeless Children hated episode craps all over Hellbent, another hated episode.
It craps over Day of the Doctor, I think. It is a story that it just... When they said Gallifrey had been destroyed at the beginning of Series 12, I was like, no, I really hope that's not the case. And if there's anything I want redone, it's the Gallifrey destruction. The idea of they're all destroyed and turned into Cybermen, it's just really that. The Cybermen never really felt like a threat for Gallifrey itself. And yeah, I really, really hate it. I'll accept most stories and things change. The Time is Children, I can get on board with that. But the idea of just crapping over this idea of Gallifrey saved, oh no, it's not, bang, done. There's only two ways you're going about it now. You either relive the Rossi Davis years of I've lost Gallifrey, or you get it back, which is reliving the Moffat years. There's no real two ways to go about this. And it just feels like it could have been done better. It feels like he's gone, no, I don't have any of that, I'm going to crap all over it and done. And that's what really peeved me off.
Yeah.
At the same time, Chibnall's doing his own thing.
Well,
of sorts. He's doing the Rossi Davis thing, but also the Timeless Child thing is his own thing. I think he could have done the Timeless Children without destroying Gallifrey, is what I'm saying.
Then again, if you look at it, is the Timeless Child truly his own thing? Because it is very heavily influenced by the Cartmel Master Plan.
It is.
He thought up this idea in the 80s.
Yeah.
When the Cartmel Plan was in place.
There you go. Well, we'll see. A bit of a controversial episode, and I'm interested to see where that plays. And we're going to talk briefly about that in a second. So, quickly, Revolution of the Daleks.
I quite like that episode. I rewatched that recently for the first time. And, yeah, it's a shame the prison thing's just ignored, basically.
Yeah.
It's only there so Jack arrives to help. The overall episode, it's decent. Robertson's more bearable. Ryan has a better performance. Jack is great. 13 just summoning the real Daleks to destroy the other ones, that's just not very smart in a way, although it is kind of cool. But then you get that Jack also. Jack just sort of leaves.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Then you get the ending where Ryan deciding, yep, I'm done, I want to go. That's been hinted at before. Okay, that's done well. It's nice to see someone leave of their own accord. And then you have Graham. Because it's like, he was just sort of there in Series 12, sticking around anyway. And then suddenly, no, yeah, I do want to continue travelling. Oh, but Ryan's going, yeah, okay, I'll go with him then. I don't want to miss him.
Yeah, in what I find the whole Ryan Graham leaving very lacklustre, to be honest. I found it was always like, oh, well, they're now going to leave, so we're now going to have a scene where they leave.
Yeah, Graham really didn't have a reason to leave.
No.
He just did.
Yeah, I know he's got ties to Ryan, but it just felt very much like, okay, we've run out of time. Oh, we need to get them to leave now because they're not going to be in the next series, so we're going to write that scene. I know it's been seen that Ryan's been unhappy. I kind of felt like he should have left before. He should have made clear that he was leaving before he left. Well, maybe that's a Clara thing, where Clara said he was going to leave and then didn't leave. I don't know.
Mm. Plus, they kept dragging out these three companions. Like, there were about three other opportunities for them, for one of them to leave, and they waited this long.
Yeah. So there were some good fun moments in it. Jack is fun. I'm assuming this is probably his last appearance. Given the allegation on John Barrowman.
Well, yeah, they've confirmed he's not going to be in Series 13, but they haven't confirmed whether he was in it.
Yeah. So, that's fine. Fans of Jack, you get some fun Jack moments. The prison escape is quite fun. I like the Weeping Angel.
The silence.
The silence is brilliant, actually. Silence was great. And, yeah, there's kind of fun. There's moments that work, moments that don't work as well. I think that Harriet Walker is wasted as Joe Patterson. But I think that's a recurring thing I'm seeing. I'm seeing great actors. They're getting... Doctor Who attracts great talent, and there's some great talent in Series 11 and 12. Not always given the best material to work from. So, we've got up to date. We've talked for every episode, actually. We've covered the old year of 13th Doctor. We've talked about the issues and the faults and what works and what we love as well. Mm. What are your thoughts on what's coming up and hopes for what's coming up for the rest of the 13th Doctor?
Series 13, I am excited for. It's definitely going to be a new thing. And I'm interested to see how the two leaked returning villains, which I won't say in case people listening to this don't know, don't want to know, how they're going to be in two separate episodes in the same story. That's going to work interestingly.
Yeah.
I'm quite excited to see Dan, because he does seem, again, he seems like the Graham replacement, but I think, like, the comedy stunt casting is working in Doctor Who. What I really want to see, 13 going darker, and then having at least, like, the centenary special without any companions. I want to see 13 without a companion. Mainly without Yaz, to be honest.
I kind of agree. I think the 13th Doctor still needs her limelight, and maybe that's what the three specials will do. I think it's going to go, if it's a 6-part story, I think it's going to go dark, and then it depends whether the three specials, which I assume are going to be New Year's Day, Spring, and the Centenary.
Well, I assume one of them seems to be the third in the Dalek trilogy people's been doing.
So of course with the 13th Doctor we're looking forward, but now we do have Russell T Davies' return kind of hanging over the show as well. Do you think that's going to have an impact on Series 13 and the specials?
I think so. I think it's going to overshadow Whittaker's last moments, which is quite sad, especially as these have the potential to be her best stories. But also, with the complete lack of marketing we have for the end of this run, it's no surprise that something like this is going to overtake it completely.
Yeah, I kind of almost wish we hadn't had the announcement that Chibnall and Whittaker were leaving and that Ross T Davies was returning to Doctor Who until after Series 13 had aired.
I understand the decision to, like, announce Russell now, the Chibnall leavings come out, because fans were understandably cautious because we hadn't had a new announcement yet. So why not leave the departure announcement till after Series 13?
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing John Bishop as Dan, because as Catherine Tate and Bradley Walsh and Matt Lucas have shown, some actors who you think actors and actresses you think, oh, really? Them as a companion? When they come on, they can be great. And you actually, some of the best love companions. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. However, what I have an issue with is there was a perfect opportunity here to have...
all-female TARDIS team.
Exactly. To have a female Doctor and a female companion for the first time in Doctor Who history. At very least, two or three episodes. Maybe John, the character?
Dan.
Maybe Dan could have come in during that run and then come a companion by the end. And maybe Dan's a companion for the last three episodes. Obviously, there's his new character as well.
Vinder
as well. But I think at least a couple of stories with Yaz and the Doctor together, an all-female TARDIS team, would have been something quite different and special as well. So a little bit disappointed by that, but also looking forward to seeing Clan as well, and looking forward to seeing Yaz being a slightly more mature companion now. And she showed some growth in the second half of Series 12 from Praxeus and essentially the Cybermen particularly, and actually in Revolution of the Daleks. So I'm hoping to see a bit more of her. I am intrigued by a six-part story. One of those villains particularly that you've mentioned. Yeah, I'm interested to see how that's done. Particularly as it's not been done by... How do I say without being too spoily? Only one writer has really done that villain. So let's see how a different writer tackles it. But we'll see. Obviously, I assume he's going to have different writers for the six parts. So it's not just Chibnall writing...
Well, I believe Maxine Alderton, who wrote Villa Diodati, is confirmed as core writer of Series 13.
Well, that's good. There's some good work there.
Either you'll have the two of them like taking turns or co-writing, or maybe like Chibnall all bring out like episodes 1 and 6, and then Maxine does 2 and 5, and then like you have two other people who do 3 and 4 or something.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what a six-part narrative does. It's been very wishy-washy at times, and actually having a strong narrative might be a good thing for the 13th Doctor. Maybe Chibnall might be able to shine a bit better. I don't rate him as a Doctor Who showrunner writer. Even his episodes before he came aboard as showrunner, you would think they were never the strongest. I quite liked his Series 7 Dinosaur and the Spaceship. That's a lot of fun. And the Power 3. I thought there was some good stuff in there. But they're not the most loved episodes. And I think all his work has been very much like, oh, they were okay to middling. So he would never, for me, felt like the most obvious choice for showrunner.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anything that he's done when I've gone, wow, that's great. I've never been wowed by this Doctor era. And I think that's on Chibnall, not on Whittaker.
Yeah, it's why I want 13 to go darker, because based on what I've heard about Broadchurch and Torchwood, that seems to be Chibnall's strength, doing the darker, more harrowing stuff. So if he can lean into that for the end of his and Whittaker's run, we might be able to end the era on a high.
I'm hopeful. I've seen the first two series of Broadchurch, which has some really good stuff in there. Whittaker was in that show as well, and there's some really good stuff. Actually, Whittaker was good in that as well. So I'm really hopeful for that. I am hopeful for some darker stuff again. Chibnall was overseeing Series 2 of Torchwood, and while it wasn't as good as Children of Earth, which most Doctor Who isn't as good as Children of Earth.
He did some Series 1 as well.
Which is more of a mixed bag. But yeah, I'm hopeful that we're going to see him tap into his talent as a writer a bit better, because I don't think what he's done so far has been that great. We've seen a little bit of ambition around the time as Children, but that, for me, feels really it. I'm really hoping Sacha Dhawan is back as a master. I hope he's tied into the story arc in the kind of way that Missy was, which became more recurring.
Yeah.
If not in this six-parter, then certainly in a special. I want to see the master at least once or twice more. I'd like to see Joe Martin back in some way as well.
I kind of feel Sasha and Joe will be in the Centenary special.
Yeah, that'd be great. If the three of them together, that's a good mix. But as long as the 13th Doctor gets her moment to shine, I don't think she's had a moment to shine properly yet.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest frustration with Doctor Who.
To be fair, she could end up just doing a Peter Davison, where her best story, the one where she really, really shines, is her final one.
Maybe. So, there's still a lot to be... I say, excited for, but I think experience of the 13th Doctor has shown us that actually that ambition and execution doesn't necessarily match what we're looking for. But at the same time, we're solid life. Well, I say not we're lifelong Doctor Who fans. We've been Doctor Who fans for the last 10 to 15 years.
To be fair, I've probably been a Doctor Who fan most of my life.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're quite young. And I've been a Doctor Who fan since it came back in 2005. So, yes, I am hopeful for us as Doctor Who fans. But also, there's a lot of casual fans out there as well. You know, maybe there are the people that do. I know there are people out there that actually just enjoy this for what it is, and maybe they enjoy the simpler nature compared to the more complex stuff around Moffat. You know, Ben and I are huge Moffat fans, and we appreciated what Moffat did. Sometimes I think he'd be reined a little bit, but for the most part, I really love what he did.
Chibnall needs the opposite. He needs someone to tell him to actually do stuff, not stop doing stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a fair shout. So hopefully, we're going to get some good stuff. Hopefully, we're going to get something exciting because I haven't been wowed yet. There's been a couple of twists and turns, like Sacha Dhawan's Master, like Joe Martin, but nothing I've really seen when I've gone wow yet. And that's disappointing. But maybe there are people that have been wowed by Doctor, and I really hope people have. So let's just kind of see what the future brings, really.
Indeed. And hopefully, like with the new run and RTD, that maybe the fandom can heal just a tiny bit, be a more nicer place more often, just a better place to be and interact with.
Yeah. And of course then, with the centenary special, the question is, are we going to see a regeneration into the 14th Doctor leading into Russell T Davies' return with the 60th anniversary in 2023?
I think we'll see a regeneration, but whether we see it completed and who the new Doctor is, I think that's up for debate. It might do a bit of a War Games scenario.
Yeah, that might happen too. I guess it depends on where the direction of the 60th anniversary is going to go.
And if they've cast the new Doctor yet, because obviously in the War Games, John Pertwee hadn't been cast when episode 10 was broadcast of the War Games, hence why he wasn't shown.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns there. So, yeah, and I think the last thing as well is it's a shame that I think Jodie Whittaker is not going to get the opportunity to have Russell T Davies write for her.
Yeah, because I don't think in the expanded media he wrote for her either. I know Moffat did.
Yeah, I think, you know, I almost feel like Jodie's missing out on the 60th anniversary.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she'll be in it, maybe she'll be a small cameo. If it's a multi-doctor story, maybe she will be there, but at the same time, it'll almost be too soon for her to be there. But on the flip side, she absolutely deserves it, so we'll see.
Indeed.
Any thoughts on what you would like from the 14th Doctor?
A female Doctor should happen.
Yes, definitely.
I have a few choices, but
I think actually, a 14th Doctor needs to be female. Otherwise, it makes it feel like, oh, well, we tried, it didn't work, and we got back to a male Doctor.
Like
the top ticket contenders are Michael Sheen. Yes, he would be great. I would love the idea of Michael Sheen 5 years ago, but I don't think he's the right Doctor now. He needs to be a female Doctor.
Maybe put him as 15 or something.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's a bit of an obvious choice, but he would have been great. I'm sure he would have done. Michael Sheen would have done some great stuff as Doctor, but I think that time has passed. I think we need a Doctor of colour, and I think a female Doctor, which I think I quite like Joe Martin's Doctor. You know, there are a few casting suggestions going out there. Anyone that kind of sparked your interest?
I mean, one that was big a while back, who is one of my top contenders anyway, is Tania Miller.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. If she was a Doctor, she was briefly the General in Hellbent, but she was also absolutely superb in The Haunting of Bly Manor. And,
And, like, she was rumoured quite a while back, and then she was like, oh, no, I'm not the 14th Doctor. Either that's her being truthful, or she's been told not to say it.
Yeah.
At this point now, with what we know about Chibnall leaving and all that sort of stuff, I think maybe she could end up being, but I don't think she was meant to be by that point earlier this year.
Yeah, I think, yes. Of those ones going out there, Tiana Miller absolutely would be our pick. I think my pick too.
Mm.
But the thing about this is that we're not going to know who Doctor's going to be. The person who's going to be a Doctor won't even come up on the headlines. It's going to be someone that's going to surprise us, and that's a good thing. You know, it's not going to be the obvious choice. I think that's a really great thing.
I know. Like, no one ever really gets this right other than maybe Capaldi. I think he became a headrunner towards the ending of his time. But some of the best Doctors were literally unknown people. Tom Baker, man who worked on a building site. Matt Smith, who was he?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Now they're some of the best.
They are. They are. Yeah, for me, they are the two best doctors. Yeah. So
in my top five.
Yeah. So I think we're going to be surprised. I hope it's female. I hope it's a female doctor. I hope it's a doctor of colour as well. If it's a male doctor, I certainly hope it's a doctor of colour, not a white doctor, because I think it's been done so much. And I think if we have Michael Sheen, as a doctor, as great as it would be very much a statement going out there, oh, female doctors don't work, we're going back to what we know.
Mm.
And I think actually Doctor Who can be progressive. Mm. And that's what that's the last thing I'm going to say, the positive about Chibnall's era. He's given us a female doctor, he's given us a black female doctor, he's given us companions of colour, he's the diversity that he's bringing to the show. An Asian master, you know, there's more to be done, I know there is, but Chibnall has done some really great work in terms of diversity there.
Yeah.
So, I think that's the end of our podcast.
Yeah.
So, thanks for joining us for this latest episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Doctor Who is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Next time, we're going to tackle some great stories. We're going to look at the Heaven Sent trilogy, aren't we?
Indeed we are. Face the Raven, Heaven Sent and Hellbent.
Yeah, so Heaven Sent was your pick of story you'd like to discuss.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely great choice. Heaven Sent is a phenomenal episode. So we're going to do the whole trilogy. We're going to look at Face the Raven, which is Clara's kind of original departure, lean into Heaven Sent. We're going to look at the marvel of Heaven Sent and try to maybe not just be wow, wow, wow for half an hour. And then we're going to look at Hellbent, which when I first listened to it, I was a little bit more conflicted about the episode. There's some great stuff and stuff that I was like, really, that's where they're going? So I would like to look at it again with fresh eyes and give my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I don't mind Hellbent.
Yeah. And hopefully we're going to have a guest to join us on that discussion as well.
Be excited.
Absolutely. So, join us again for the TARDIS crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
We dig music.
I like it. I just like it less than Enya.
That was, ladies and gentlemen, the moment where Ian's credibility just disappeared.
I had no problem with that. No problem with that.
I think it's the craziest opinion we've ever had on the show.
It's definitely going to be the most fucking controversial one, I think.
Yeah, it's fine. Because, you know, that's because I'm not moving like a tortoise full of rigor mortis. Which is possibly one of the worst rhyming couplets.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
Yeah, and I think as we're on a Red Dwarf podcast, something we always gush about is the model work of the first six series of Red Dwarf. And that is outstanding, and it is better than this. But for 1967, the model work in this, I don't see where you could say it was anything other than good quality.
Yeah, it was perfectly acceptable, I think, for the time. It was fun, you know. It was fun. I mean, is it the best example of the model work at the time in these films? No, but I certainly wouldn't say it's particularly shonky in any way.
Frame to Frame.
With this being done by Bear McCreary, who I believe you may have interviewed, Sean.
I have. He's brilliant.
What did you make of this score?
I really like it. Bear McCreary is a fabulous horror. I mean, he started on The Walking Dead, so that's really how he got his name, with lots of very interesting noises and ambient textures and things. On the first Happy Death Day score, he actually used he's got a young daughter, and he used her vocals and distorted them and processed them to create that creepy.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. Hey everyone, this is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to, or you're just about to listen to. We'd love to keep the lights on a bit longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights on the website and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. So just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis to get the ball rolling. Now, back to your scheduled programming.